Thank you very much, Ed. I really appreciate your asking me to give remarks to begin, as it were, this celebration of the conservative mind at 60. Who could believe at that time? Now, you know what made Russell's reputation was the conservative mind, of course. And for some of you, we have a lot of young people here, they may not know that he was in Time magazine on the July 6th issue of 1953 when the book came out. And this is the cover. It's got George Washington on the cover. And there are four pages in here of a review of the conservative mind. And that conservative mind review was suggested by Whittaker Chambers, okay? Was by Whittaker Chambers suggested it and to Henry Luce, and they did it. And of course, then after that, it's all history. So I have this with me if anybody would like to look at the actual review today, okay? Well, Russell was fond of quoting a line with which we are all familiar. We are dwarves mounted on the shoulders of giants. In the conservative mind, Russell stitched together a fabric whose threads traced the minds of giants with conservative dispositions. Thus, it seems ironic, yet appropriate, that a book published this year, six decades after the publication of Russell's seminal work, also traces a thread in the common mind of 12 literary figures, entitled The Common Mind, Politics, Society, and Christian Humanism, from Thomas More to Russell Kirk. The book was written by a headmaster in an English boarding school. The author, André Gushurst Moore, traces the continuity of the common mind and how it counters modernity, how the drama of disintegration meets its match in the forces of integration, which continue the work of conservation, defense, restoration, and recovery. He specifically cites 12 figures in this book, very much like Russell's book, where he cites the figures and draws that thread through history. Those 12 figures are Thomas More, Jonathan Swift, Samuel Johnson, Burke, Coleridge, Newman, Orestes Bronson, Disraeli, Chesterton, Eliot, C.S. Lewis, and Russell Kirk. In Russell, the author of The Common Mind says, we see an imaginative defense of human norms in an age of boredom. This thoughtful book, written only two decades after Russell's death, acclaims him as a giant upon whose shoulders we stand. What was it that Russell wished to accomplish living in a village at the back of beyond? What was his mission? In a letter to the publisher, Henry Regnery, in 1987, Russell explained, what I have been undertaking ever since I was published nationally is the defense of what Eliot called the permanent things. My historical works, polemical writings, and even my fiction have been meant to resist the ideological passions that have consumed civilization ever since 1914, what Arnold Toynbee called our time of troubles. Russell continues, so the next decade of my life will be spent as earlier decades were spent in contending against intellectual and social disorder. In particular, I hope to continue writing about the causes of the afflictions of the soul and the afflictions of the Commonwealth in this century that now draws to a close. I mean to let some cheerfulness break in, to remind readers that the will, after all, is free, and to draw a sword against historical determinism. Differing somewhat from my friend Malcolm Muggeridge, I have not abandoned hope for us confused creatures here below. Russell's latter reference is to a wonderful seminar held at Christmas time in our house and library entitled Pilgrims in the Dark Wood of Our Time, in which Malcolm Muggeridge, though witty and wise, was quite gloomy about civilization continuing as we have known it. Conversely, on that occasion, Russell stated that he hoped to throw pebbles into a pond so their ripples would extend outward to a wider audience and take root in the minds and hearts of the rising generation, especially those students who attended the frequent seminars we hosted in Macosta and the many young people who lived with us and became part of our extended family. The mission, then, of the Russell Kirk Center is to continue this work of throwing pebbles into a pond, of informing and inspiring young people to make their life's work the acquiring of knowledge necessary to possess for the task of reinvigorating culture, of redeeming the time. Or at least, if unable to take up this large task in their own lives, in influencing the little platoon in society to which they belong, their family, friends, and their neighborhoods. Chief among the knowledge that they need to acquire is an understanding of Eliot's permanent things, Burke's appreciation for the eternal contract that links generations, and the moral imagination. An understanding of that is key to this day and age because it's contrasted with the diabolic and the idyllic imagination so much on display in our culture and which our young people are so exposed to. In his last book, The Politics of Prudence, consisting of lectures delivered at the Heritage Foundation, Russell wrote, "A society in which men and women are governed by belief in an enduring moral order, by a strong sense of right and wrong, by personal convictions about justice and honor, will be a good society, whatever political machinery it may utilize. While a society in which men and women are morally adrift, ignorant of norms, and intent chiefly upon gratification of appetites, will be a bad society, no matter how many people voted, and no matter how liberal its formal constitution may be." Russell urged the young to become indifferent to wealth and fame, to set their faces against things evil, and by doing God's will, to find that peace that passeth all understanding. While lifelong, Russell addressed the decadence in our day and the limitation of anything human or material to correct it, At the last, Russell's ultimate hope rested in the resurrection. On Easter Sunday, 2 weeks before he died, always loving parable and poetry, he gathered us together, the family and those who lived with us, and read to us lines from Chesterton's Ballad of the White Horse, lines concluding The Conservative Mind, whose original title as a doctoral dissertation at St. Andrews University in Scotland was called The Conservative Rout. But of course, the publisher thought that that was too dire. And so consequently, it turned to The Conservative Mind. It was amazing to me when I started writing this to actually remember that Russell, in the last pages of The Conservative Mind, actually writes these four lines. "The wise men know what wicked things are written on the sky. They trim sad lamps, they touch sad strings, and plot how God shall die." And then he goes on to explain a little bit more and ends with more poetry in the Conservative Mind. Russell published The Conservative Mind when he was 35 years old. But here's the rest of the poem he read to us at the end of his life when he was 75 years old. "But you, and all the kind of Christ, are ignorant and brave, and you have wars you hardly win, and souls you hardly save. Do you have joy without a cause, yea, faith without a hope? The men of the East may spell the stars, and times and triumphs mark, but the men signed of the cross of Christ go gaily in the dark. And so he did, and so should you." Thank you very much.
Thank you, Annette. That was wonderful. Professor Brad Berger holds the Russell Kirk Chair in American Studies at Hillsdale College. He did his bachelor's degree at Notre Dame, his PhD at Indiana University. He is the father of 7 children. He has written books on John Carroll, on Tolkien, Christopher Dawson, and most appropriately for this evening, he is coming out with a biography of Russell Kirk that will be published by the University of Kentucky Press early in the new year, which we all look forward to. But it's my very great pleasure to invite Brad, one of us, to come up and talk about Russell Kirk, The Permanent Things, A Conservative Mind, and our entire theme. Brad, will you come up and share your thoughts with us?
Well, good evening, everyone. Ed is funny. He told me right before I walked up, you have to follow Annette Kirk. And he kind of chuckled and said, good luck. And I'm happy to do that, very happy. Annette, I would count as one of my closest friends, and I'm very proud to count her as one of my closest friends. I also want to say thanks to a number of people, to Bill Campbell, for inviting me tonight.